Tonight we're going to wrap up the Better Story series, and for the past month, Brian and then David have been doing a marvelous job just letting us know that there's more than one narrative out there, right? The world says, here's the story we want you to live in, and we're here to tell you that Jesus offers a better story. He offers a better way to live and love and find meaning and purpose. Last week, David talked to us about the world just says, go find a career. And God says, no, 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 I have a calling for each and every one of my sons and daughters. So we're going to finish that up, the better story, with something that is a part of a better story that's a little bit counterintuitive. And to tell you about it or ease you into it, let me tell you about a story from my life when I was roughly your age. I just graduated from college. I had my first real job in my major field, and I was living on the Gulf Coast of Florida in a town that had amazing fishing, and I loved to fish. And in my first job, I made a friend who also not only loved to fish but owned a boat. Let me tell you, it is better to have a friend who owns a boat than to own a boat yourself. It's much cheaper. It's less of a hassle. If you're ever choosing, let them own the boat. One afternoon, my friend came, and he said, look, hey, going to be a beautiful sunset tonight. Let's go fishing after work. I'll go grab the bait. You meet me at the boat launch. We'll just go out and we'll catch fish and we'll have a great time. We'll watch the sun go down. I said, amazing, let's do that. And so we did. And we went to fish in some mangroves. If you're not familiar with mangroves, they're kind of bushes that grow right out of the ocean. And they're a great spot to fish because little fish hide in the mangroves and big fish come to eat the little fish. And we, of course, wanted to catch the big fish. So we went out, we spent a few hours together, it was gorgeous, we caught a lot of fish, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't so gorgeous anymore. We looked up, and the sky had gone from a beautiful Florida sunset to just being black, and then the lightning started. Now, you know they tell you that you can tell how far away lightning is by the gap between when you see the flash and you hear the crack or the boom? There was no gap. It was flash, crack, and the hair on my arm stood up. And we're about half a mile offshore in a metal boat in a lightning storm. Now, this is before the era where you had a smartphone that would alert you to weather stuff. We just missed it. And we decided we were either going to stay in the boat and probably get lit up, or we were going to beach that little boat in the mangroves and tie it off and climb out and just kind of crouch on that root system. And we did. And I was scared to death. I thought I was going out to have this amazing time, and I did, until I didn't. Now, you might not like to fish. You may have never been in a boat or climbed onto a mangrove. That's probably really highly unlikely. But I have a hunch that you've had your own share of storms. Storms that weren't really expected. You were doing fine until you weren't. So a better story. Tonight, we want to address this idea that one of the narratives you're given as a college student is that college is going to be the best time of your life. You're going to be free and not have to deal with your parents anymore. You're going to make lifelong friends. You're going to fall in love. You're going to love your major. You're just going to have this amazing time. And maybe some of us have, and then all of a sudden we didn't. And we found ourselves actually missing our family. Imagine that. We found ourselves not liking our roommates, not finding our people. We were surrounded by people, but we felt alone. Maybe you're thinking, why in the world did I sign up for this major? Like, this is not working out for me at all. And if all you have is college is amazing, it's really hard to live a great story when things aren't going so amazing. So here's the idea we really want to dig into tonight. A better story has victories and celebration and fun and fall retreat and amazing times. And it also includes struggle, weakness, and vulnerability. A better story simply says it's okay if you are not always okay. You don't always have to be amazing. You don't have to always feel like you're winning. Now, I'm not the only one to come through a storm in a boat. Rachel just read Matthew 14 for us in an account of Jesus' closest followers who found themselves in a boat, scared to death in a storm that they did not see coming. And so tonight, we're going to kind of walk through their experience. We're going to live a little bit vicariously through them and see if there aren't some possible reasons why, it's better when life is not always easy? Is it possible that life is actually better when it sometimes is really good and then other times is also kind of hard? So talk about a few reasons tonight. I just want to highlight them and name them for us. Here's the first: it's vulnerability and weakness and struggle, because that's just how life is. Because that's what's real and what's true. Because life every day includes both successes and struggles, wins and losses, right? Sometimes we nail it, sometimes we fail. Now, I think I started to learn this as a little kid through a TV show called The Wide World of Sports. None of you know about that show because you're just way too young. It was back in an era where there were only a few channels, and I grew up as a kid who loved sports, and you didn't get a lot of opportunities to watch sports. But every Saturday, this show would come on where they would show all the sports highlights. They would show the home runs and the touchdown passes and the, you know, record-breaking times in track, and they would also show people falling flat on their face. In fact, the tagline was the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And the little intro bumper video that ran every Saturday showed this ski jumper. You know those crazy people during the Winter Olympics who strap on a pair of skis and they go down the hill and then they fly? They showed this, I think he was a Russian ski jumper, who missed the landing and tumbled time and time and time again. And I think I love that show because it acknowledged that sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. Now, you're way too young to remember that, but there is a version of kind of that today. And it's not all sports, but it's kind of those like huge successes and the epic fails. And it's called Chive TV. Have you guys ever seen Chive TV? It's a streaming television network that you'll probably find on in any sports bar or any place you've got all the TVs on in a restaurant. It just runs on a loop. In fact, we have a clip here for you if we want to bring the lights down a little bit. And it's just like really cool thing that people can do. Crazy people who are trying to smash themselves against a rock for some reason, right? People who just have kind of, that's 5 seconds, right? People just doing amazing things, and people who get it wrong. Huh? Right. I love the anticipatory, when the high dive came up, like you knew what was coming, right? Let me just tell you, if we ever book a lunch appointment, and we sit down and that's on behind you, I will probably ask you to switch seats because I cannot stop watching. I want to see the things that are amazing. And I also want to be reminded that sometimes we don't stick the dive. We land flat on our face. That's just real life. Jesus once said, in this world, you will have trouble. But cheer up because I've overcome the world. Right? It's what Jesus said. Well, this is how this manifests for the disciples in the boat in Matthew 14. And as they find themselves stuck in a storm, we actually get a glimpse into some times when storms pop up that we don't expect. Some times when we find ourselves struggling, when we would really think we'd be doing better. So this is Matthew 14, picking up in verse 22. Jesus quickly made his disciples get into a boat and cross to the other side ahead of him, while he sent the people away. So sometimes our struggles come when we feel really confident. So Jesus takes his disciples, there are 12 of them that follow him really, really closely. And after a long day of ministry, which we'll talk more about in a minute, he says, hey, fellas, get in the boat and cross the lake. I'm gonna go be with my Father. I'm gonna go reconnect and refresh. I'll meet you on the other side. They're the other side. They have the boat, right? But here's what I find myself fascinated by. 4 of the 12, before they started following Jesus, you want to know what they did for a living? They were fishermen. Their families owned commercial fishing businesses. They spent 6 days a week in a boat. And if there's anywhere they would feel confident, it'd be on the water. They don't always know what Jesus is saying. They don't always understand what he's doing. But when Jesus said, hey, take the boat, I can picture Peter and James and John and Andrew going, finally, like, we know how to do this. Maybe some of you are struggling right now because you thought you could do college. You were always so good at math, and then you hit calculus. And it said, oh, no, my friend, you're not going to be an engineer, right? Maybe you have always, I know, that's painful. I've talked to some of you. Maybe you've always, like, rocked every science, and then you got to organic chemistry. And you thought, wow, I thought I was good at this. Maybe you've been the person who could always walk into a room full of people and easily make friends, and then you got here, and it just somehow didn't work for you. If you feel really confident, beware, you may be minutes away from a storm. I'm sure Peter and James and John and Andrew thought, finally, we're back in a boat. And then they weren't so glad they were back in the boat. Jesus sent the people away, and after sending the people away, he went up a mountain to pray by himself, and when evening came, he was there alone. Now, there are actually three kind of characters in this story. There's Jesus, there's the band of 12 disciples, and then there's this group of people. And all we really know about them, if we start reading at this point in Matthew 14, is Jesus sends them away. This is an example of why we often, as we teach, we talk about context. Like, you don't just need to know what that verse says or that paragraph says. You need to read a little up and you need to read a little down. And if you read a little up in Matthew 14, you'll find that this is a crowd of thousands of people. 5,000 men and likely some women and children. 1,000 people, 15,000 people, 20,000 people. They'd flock to hear Jesus teach, and he taught all day. And then the disciples said, hey, it's dinner time. Like, send them to get something to eat. And Jesus says, no, you give them something to eat. And they said, look, we're broke. Like, we work for you. Like, we don't have any money here. But here's what we've got. We stole a young boy's lunch, and that's what we've got. Like, enough to feed, like, a couple people. And Jesus asked the Father's blessing, and he miraculously multiplies the food. And they pass it out, and they pass it out, and they pass it out until everybody's stuffed, and then they go pick up leftovers. That's what's just happened. Like, they're coming off this amazing victory where they actually helped do the miracle. It's not just that they got to see the miracle, they got to taste the miracle. They got to pass out the miracle. And I think this is a good reminder for us when we think about times we struggle. Sometimes struggles come when things are really going great. They've just had a victory, and now they're in the middle of a storm. And if you're a freshman, maybe you came here tonight on the heels of a victory. Like, everybody was so excited you were going to college. They threw the going away party for you. They high-fived you. You went to Target. You bought all the dorm stuff. You came to kickoff week. You came to all of our 20 events. You had a blast. And now you're surprised that you feel so lonely or sad or frustrated, or whatever it is. Everything was going so great until it wasn't. Passage continues. The boat, now hundreds of yards from the shore, which is a lot out on the water, right? Hundreds of yards is a big distance if you're rowing. It was being thrown around by the waves because it was going against the wind. And then Mark's account of the same story says that Jesus looked and he saw that they were in a lot of trouble. Can we agree that if Jesus thinks you're in a lot of trouble, you're probably in a lot of trouble? Because he doesn't seem to worry about anything. They are in a lot of trouble. And here's the thing. When you're on a boat in the middle of the water and you can't make it to shore, you've got nowhere to go. Have you ever been offshore fishing and gotten a little seasick? There's nowhere to go, right? You've just got to deal with it. And sometimes our struggles pop up when we feel like we can't escape. When I was a youth pastor, I took a mission trip to Jamaica, and we had a great time. We didn't do the fun touristy parts of Jamaica. We served, you know, students and kids in Jamaica, but we did spend a day in the mountains of Jamaica, and we had this microbus, which I would say was about the size of a minivan with 15 people in it and no air conditioning in Jamaica. And as the youth pastor, I thought, you know, it was my job to serve everybody. So I sat in the back on the mountain roads. And at some point, one of the students looked at me and they said, Fred, are you okay? Because you're green. And I said, no, I'm really not okay. And so they're asking the driver to pull off, and the driver's like, there's nowhere to pull off. This is a one-lane mountain road with two lanes of traffic, right? The rest of the world doesn't do, you know, highway design like we do necessarily here in America. And I just knew, like, I'm either going to throw up or I'm just going to suffer and try to hold it in. Nowhere to go. Maybe more than anything tonight, you just wish you could go home, but you can't. Or you desperately wish you could swap your roommate for a sane person, but you can't. Or you wish you could drop that class where you're having to work harder than you ever have, but you can't. Sometimes our struggles pop up because there's nowhere for us to go. And so a better story just says, look, sometimes life will be amazing. Sometimes life will be fall retreat and kickoff week, and sometimes you will not be okay, and that's okay. There's a second kind of reason that we're not always okay, and it's this, because God actually shows up in our struggles. Now, truthfully, I don't really believe that. I believe God's always there. What I mean is we become more aware of God when we're struggling than at times when we're not. So do you know anybody who just always seems to show up in your life at a certain time? Like, have you ever had a boss who only came by when you were not doing anything? You could work 6-8 hours straight, and they only happen to pass you when you're taking a break and talking to your friends. And you're like, hey, would you come by more often? Because I was working hard not too long ago. One of my children has a real sensitivity to profanity. And as they were growing up and kind of developing, you know, we kind of explained to them, like, we don't use a lot of profanity in our house, but it might be on TV from time to time. But we try to watch those shows after you're in bed. And this particular child got out of bed every time something objectionable was on TV. Like, seriously, like, there could be one word in a whole show, and it wouldn't happen until they plucked their head out and said, what are you watching? Oh, there it is. Oh, that's what you watch when I'm in bed. No, it's not. Like, you just always seem to show up then. Is there anybody in your life, and maybe this is the work of God, who shows up when you need encouragement, and they probably don't know it? You're down, and they light your phone up. You're down and you get like a real letter in the mail. You're just not well, and just God seems to nudge them or prompt them, and they just seem to show up when you need them. Look, God has a habit of showing up when we are not okay. And that's exactly what happens in Matthew 14. Between 3 and 6 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came to them. He was walking on the sea. And this next sentence is in Mark's account of the same story, and I think it's powerful. It tells us what Jesus was planning to do. He wanted to pass them by. Like, he's like, I'm not ready for you yet. Like, just give me, I'll meet you on the other side. But he ends up getting in the boat with them precisely because they're not okay. Like, here's something I hope you hear if you hear anything tonight. Our vulnerability is what draws God and God's people toward us. You may be here thinking, like, this Jesus thing sounds good. Man, I don't know why all those people are so excited when they sing, but I want that too. Or maybe I've had faith before and I'm trying to circle back around. And after I pull myself together, after I stop drinking, after I stop sleeping with him, after I stop partying, at whatever it is, and you're thinking, I have to kind of make myself presentable, and then maybe God would move a little closer to me. No. Jesus is drawn to us in the middle of our mess. He looks at his friends, and they're about to go under. And even though he really wants to just walk across the lake, he veers and he comes to them. And let me tell you, that's not just Jesus. That's Jesus' people. I don't know if you're in a group yet here, if you're in a shift group, or if you're in a core group. Maybe you just signed up for the philosophy group that's starting. But I want to encourage you to be brave enough at some point, as you know people and you trust them and you feel safe, be brave enough to be vulnerable. Because if you'll talk about who you really are and where you really are, you're going to see other people not lean back and say, oh my, that, she's a mess. Like, I don't want to deal with that. He's out there. You'll see other people lean in. Have you seen this in groups? One person is brave enough to say, hey, I'm struggling with this. And all of a sudden, like four other people are like, yep, right here. You're not alone. I was in our core group this week, and one of our guys was sharing like a painful experience about losing a family member they loved and got teary. And for guys, like for some guys, that's a big deal. And all the guys in the group leaned in. So I really want to let people know what I'm dealing with, what's been done to me, what shame I carry, what I'm trying to forgive myself for, forgive. I want to challenge you, just be vulnerable. Be real. Because God and God's people will lean into you. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. And they said, it's a ghost. And they began to scream because they were afraid. Okay, it's not bad enough we're drowning. Now we also have to deal with ghosts. That sounds like an awful lot for 3 to 6 o'clock in the morning. Jesus comes to them, right? And he comes to them because they're afraid. So this year, during kickoff, we give out a lot of paper around here. Does anybody else feel that way? Like, because we want you to know what's available. We want you to know about Shift and Synergy and Fall Retreat. And one of the pieces of paper that was handed out at most events this year was called the CSF Pledge. And Brian, our kind of lead pastor, said, I just really want to kind of tell students what we promise them. Like, we're not perfect, and we don't deliver every time, although we try our best, but here's our heart. And a part of the CSF pledge speaks to this idea that we just need to be honest, right? One of these points on this card is this: we try to be a place that is honest. No one needs to pretend to be any smarter or better than they are. No fakeness allowed here. A place where all questions and questioners are welcome. And Brian and the team that worked on that penned that because they knew that when we're honest, we become more aware of the God who loves us and understands that we are people who struggle, that we are weak, that we are vulnerable. And instead of veering away, he comes close, actually gets in the boat with us. Now, Jesus actually says to them, I love this, calm down, it's me. Now, that's one of the reasons they might have known it was Jesus, because Jesus has this habit of saying, don't be afraid. Isn't that great? Like, the God of the universe looks at everything we're going through, and he's not saying it's not real, but he's saying, you don't have to be afraid. So let's, for just a minute, let's stop talking about them and let's talk about us. Let me ask you, just in your mind, not with your mouth or with your voice, I want you to answer this question. What storm or what ghost are you dealing with right now? What's popped up and it feels like it's swamping you? Maybe what is there from your past that's wandering around, shaming you or accusing you? Like, if you thought about your struggles, what would it be? You got that? Got an answer? Let me ask you to close your eyes for just a minute. Nothing weird will happen, I promise. Well, I'm not going to do anything weird. I can't promise the person next to you, but let's try to be kind and neighborly here. Close your eyes for a second. And think of the storm or the ghost that you are wrestling with, and then not my voice, but I want you to hear this from Jesus. Calm down. It's me. Don't be afraid. That's the heart of Jesus for us. Like, he's not saying there's not a storm. He's saying, calm down, because I'm with you. I'm drawn in by your hurt. I'm drawn in by your pain. I'm drawn in by your struggle and your suffering and your weakness. I'm here with you. Don't be afraid. Like, a better story just acknowledges that we all blow it, and we have hurts, and we have scars, and we have habits, and we have hangups, because that is when we are more likely to be aware that Jesus is right there. Maybe he wanted to pass us by, but instead, he's right there, ready to get in the boat with you and with me. One more reason, as we kind of move through the text tonight, why a better story includes struggles, and it's because grow. We don't always get better through our victories. We get better through our losses. I get a bunch of email every day, but one email that I get every day is like a little motivational saying. I don't think I ever signed up for this. Do you get those emails? Like, I don't think I ever checked a box, but they're usually good. And today's email was this. It's a quote by a guy named John Maxwell, who's a church leader and a leadership guy. And it was a simple sentence. It says, "Sometimes you win and sometimes you learn." Now, his point is you never really lose, because when you don't really succeed, there's something to learn, right? We've all been through physical growing pains. Could it be that spiritual growing pains for us involve struggle? Like when we're hurt, when we're a little bruised and a little wounded, and we feel all those emotions we've named tonight. In this story, in the next five or so verses, there are like five different things that Peter, who kind of emerges as a face and a voice of this group in this passage, and his friends have an opportunity to learn. Now, I'm not suggesting they learn them all in that moment, but it's so rich. And I want to just take a minute and name them, because I have a hunch that one of them is something I need to be learning right now, and that one of them might be something that you need to be learning right now. So I'm going to breeze through them and just kind of name them, but I want you to listen for something that connects to your storm, your ghost that you're still trying to wrestle down, that Jesus says, you know what? Calm down. It's me. Don't be afraid. And I'm going to help you here. Okay, so this is what happens. They're freaked out. And Peter answers, "Lord, if it is you, order me to come to you on the water." Jesus says, "Come." So Peter gets out of the boat and walks on the water toward Jesus. Like, Peter has this moment where he has a chance to grow to understand God's presence in his life. Here's what I mean. Peter's been in a boat with Jesus numerous times, and he's never said anything like this. When he's freaked out, he's willing to say this: "Jesus, are you real? Jesus, are you there for me? Jesus, are you able not just to do this for yourself? That's impressive. Could you call me out onto the water?" Is it possible that your struggle right now, there's an opportunity? I'm not saying God's doing this to you at all, but is there an opportunity in there for God to be more real for you than he's ever been before? And you simply need to say, "God, if you're real, like, I need this right now. I need you to show up. I need you to call me out of this mess and close to you." So Jesus does that. And Peter walks on the water. But then he notices how strong the wind was, and he became afraid, and he starts to sink, and he shouts, "Lord, save me." Like, I love this, because I think Peter's given an opportunity to learn something that we have to keep learning, and that's God's place in our lives. As long as he looked at Jesus, he was fine. As long as he looked at the trouble, he started to go under. Has that ever happened to you? Is it possible that at times we'll acknowledge God and Jesus, but he doesn't get the first place in our lives? He's not what we're focused on. He's not what we're building our lives on. Like, we're building our life on getting that degree and making that money, and then it's not happening and we start to sink. And God says, "That's never what I asked you to build your life on. You're building your sense of self-worth on her or on him." And God says, "Look, they're great. But if that's what you're holding on to, you're going under. Keep your eyes on me." Right? Maybe this is just, if you're struggling, maybe it's a moment to say, "Jesus, it's odd. When I look at you, I'm okay. When I look at the chaos around me, I start to go under." And so Peter does the smart thing. He's vulnerable and weak, and he asks for help. "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reaches out, catches, "You have so little faith. Why did you doubt?" Now, Peter usually gets kind of bashed here, but can we just acknowledge he did walk on water? Like, he did say, "If you're there, Jesus, call me out." And Jesus called him out. And yet then he starts to drown. And Jesus doesn't say, "Sorry, man, you had your chance. I helped you once." No. He pulls him up and then teaches him, like, "Why did you doubt?" And Peter has a moment where he can learn about the grace of God. He's learning that God is not just about helping you once, and that's it. Here's what I love about Peter kind of being a name and a face in stories like this, is that guy has his own fair share of victories and a whole lot of stumbles. If there was a spiritual Chive TV, like, you would see him fall on his face again and again. You'd see him sink in the water. You'd see him actually tell Jesus that he should not follow through with God's plan, and Jesus call him the devil. You'd see him denying Jesus when he had a chance to say, that's my leader, and that's my Lord, and I'm with him. You'd see him in the New Testament called a hypocrite, because he talks one way and lives another. The book of Acts, you'd actually see him argue with God when God's trying to teach him something, and he just tells God, no, God, that's got to be wrong. I trust, one of the many reasons I trust the Bible is because it tells real stories of real people who are not perfect. Like, our core groups right now are in Hebrews 11 for sophomores to seniors, and we're studying the hall of faith and the heroes of faith, and almost everybody in there has another part to their story where they blow it, where they lose it, where they stumble. Could it be that in your struggle, God just wants you to know, I'm merciful, gracious. I died for every sin you're ever committing. And that's not a license to go sin and sin and sin, but you just need to know, when you stumble, I'm here. When you're going under, I'm not going to let you drown. So he pulls Peter up. And these four words that sound so casual, then the wind stopped blowing. Now remember, they were about to go under. I mean, this is a raging storm, and then it's not there anymore. There's a similar story where they're actually out in a boat, and the disciples who know what they're doing in a boat start to, like, kind of freak out because they think they're going to drown, and Jesus himself is sleeping, and they wake him up. And I like to imagine that he's a little bit annoyed by this because he needed a nap maybe. And he just says to the wind and the waves, just stop. Just stop. And they do, because he's the maker of the wind and the waves. And is it possible that in this season, whatever your storm is or whatever your ghosts are, it's just a chance for you to grow to understand God's power? It's not that your storm isn't real. It's just that he's greater. It's not that the enemy isn't real. It's just that he's already won. It's not that what happened to you in the past didn't happen. It's that healing and hope and restoration is really possible. God's not asking you to deny reality. He's asking you to understand that reality includes him. He's greater than anything I'm dealing with or you're dealing with. And then the story kind of stops here. The men in the boat bowed down in front of Jesus and said, "You are truly the Son of God." And they make that confession, not in the middle of victory, but right after they've barely survived the storm. In fact, Mark adds this blurb. They did not understand what had happened with the loaves of bread. Instead, their minds were closed. You know what? It's possible that you and I come to understand God's identity, who he really is, more from our struggles than from our mountaintop moments. I mean, again, these guys just helped do a miracle, and that did not lead them to believe more. But Jesus calming the storm, they said, you've got to be God. Like, you've got to be God's son. Now, that's like they just kind of sail on and they land on the other shore. But I want to take just a minute and show you what happens for other people, because I'm concerned that sometimes I read the Bible and I think, yeah, but that's Peter. Yeah, but that's Ruth. Yeah, but that's what God did for Abraham and Sarah. But the Bible also contains God working for bunches of people. And so I just want to invite us in. We weren't in the boat, but I want us to be on the shore when they land. I want you to see yourself in these next three verses. They crossed the sea and landed at Gennesaret. The men there recognized Jesus and sent messengers all around the countryside. Now, footnote or parenthetical note, they recognized Jesus because he's been there before, and he did a miracle for one demon-possessed person. And that demon-possessed person said, can I get in the boat with you? And Jesus said, no. I want you to go home, and I want you to tell everybody what God did for you. And he did. And so the next time Jesus shows up, they're like, he's back. And they run and they bring him. What's that word that's highlighted? No. What's the word? Everyone. They bring him everybody who's sick. Everybody. They begged him to let them just touch the edge of his clothes. And here's the word again. What word is it? Everyone who touches him gets well. Everyone includes you. Everyone includes me. Like, a better story makes room for us not to be okay, because that's real life. And that's when we often see God show up in ways we hadn't seen before. And that's when we learn. And I know that's true probably for everybody in the room. So I want to invite you to do this. We're going to have the worship band come back up. And they're going to play some more. And I want to invite everyone who at least can imagine a storm, a wound, a ghost, whatever language you would put around it. I just want to invite us all to reach out and offer that to Jesus, to the edge of his cloak, because everybody who does that gets hope and healing and restoration. And as I say that, you may think, okay, I know how to do that. Like, during worship, I'll just kind of offer my pain to God. I'll offer my struggles to God. And some of us may not have any idea what that means. So I want to invite you to do two things. First, we have people who would love to pray with you. They're going to be right outside this back door and right outside that side door. And if you're like, man, I want to bring my struggles to Jesus, but I just don't know how, they are there to help you. They're there to just be alongside of you. Secondly, if you're not ready tonight to take advantage of that, there's a QR code on the back of the chairs. And before you leave, if you'll take your phone out, point your camera at the QR code, you'll get a link that will let you sign up for what we call a coffee cart around here. And one person on our team will reach out to you and say, hey, do you want to talk? Hey, maybe you weren't ready to go to the prayer people. Maybe you weren't ready in worship, but I want to hear about your struggles. I want to know what's happened. I want to know where you're not okay, because I know the one who's greater than the storm. Because we know the one who can let everybody touch the edge of the garment and be healed. All right? So that's the invitation tonight. Worship, bring it to Jesus. Please take advantage of our prayer team. If that feels a little out there for you, but you're feeling a tug, you probably need to do it. And if not, grab that QR code, get a coffee cart. All right, I'm going to get out of the way. These guys are going to lead us. Let's bring ourselves to Jesus tonight.